Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Amitai Etzioni, a former senior advisor to the White House and director of the Institute for Communitarian Policy Studies at George Washington University. We will discuss the implications of the victory of Money Over Grassroots Organization in Wisconsin and his article at CNN, U.S. Economy Heading Straight for the Cliff. Then we'll further examine the impact of Wisconsin on the central theme of the presidential race, the economy, and what likely fallout will come from Europe, where Spain is facing a run on its banks and Greece is about to go broke in July. Dean Baker, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, joins us to analyze the state of the economy in an election year and what external factors might slow or reverse recovery. Then finally, former advisor to the Obama White House and founding president of Rebuild the Dream, Van Jones, joins us to offer his analysis of the 7-point victory of Governor Walker in Wisconsin and how progressives might recover from this demoralizing defeat. Following a successful Republican divide-and-conquer strategy largely financed by plutocrats that pitted the shrinking middle class against itself, we will discuss Van Jones' latest book, Rebuild the Dream, and how the 99% can reverse the race to the bottom to reclaim the American dream. And joining us now is Dr. Amitai Etzioni, who is university professor and professor of international affairs and director of the Institute for Communitarian Policy Studies at George Washington University. He served as a senior advisor to the White House from 1979 to 1980, and in 1990 he founded the Communitarian Network, a not-for-profit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to shoring up the moral, social, and political foundations of society. Dr. Etzioni is the author of 24 books, including The New Golden Rule, The Spirit of Community, and The Moral Dimension Towards a New Economics. His most recent books are My Brother's Keeper, A Memoir and a Message, From Empire to Community, A New Approach to International Relations, and How Patriotic is the Patriot Act. He has an article at CNN, U.S. Economy Heading Straight for the Cliff. Welcome to Background Briefing, Amitai Etzioni.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So I think today is a day where progressives across this country are pretty depressed about what happened in Wisconsin. What's your sense then of the apparent disparity in this country between the power of money and the demoralization of the grassroots?
Well, the American people, or the overwhelming majority, is angry, from my viewpoint, for some very, very good reasons. They see that banks get bailed out, but not homeowners. They see that corporations which commit crimes don't get punished. They see that Wall Street gives their executives huge bonuses using, in effect, taxpayers' money. I mean, I could go on for as much time as you have and some, with the litany of things which I think made the blood boil of any citizen or any decent human being. The problem is not that they're wrong being angry. The problem is that they are projecting their anger on the wrong address. Somehow they got talked into the notion that the problem is the government rather than our political system. Including the enormous and increasing role money plays in our public life. And so the progressives should look in the mirror and ask themselves why they've been unable to formulate a message which will help people see where their anger should be directed.
Well, it does seem that in many ways, psychologically, what we're going through here in this country is a political form of the Stockholm syndrome, that perhaps the victim is identifying with the torturer.
Well, that's very well put, very well put. But so where are we going to go and sit back and wait for the shrinks to come to our rescue? I say not. So that's exactly what we need, is awaken these people caught in such a syndrome to begin with, to get a realistic picture, to get reality testing, if you want to use psychological terms, before we can talk about how we're going to change reality.
Well, it does seem, Dr. Amitai Etzioni, what happened in Wisconsin is a very clever divide and conquer strategy in terms of splitting the middle class, pitting them against each other, the public sector employees against the private sector employees in a race to the bottom. The dynamic is not about raising all boats, but it's about wanting to grab what's left of the crumbs. And this, of course, appears to be a very successful strategy. What do you think it will take then for people to recognize that what's at stake here is the middle class and is the future of American democracy? And inexorably, we seem to be heading towards a plutonomy run by oligarchs.
Yeah, no, I think we are well in a plutocracy in which instead of one person, one vote, we have $1, one vote. I think we're very close to that, especially after the Supreme Court decision of Citizens United, which opens the floodgates for corporations and rich individuals to just sow in as much money as they want. Now, what it would take, the answer is about as clear as things are ever in history. Major social changes occurred, in my judgment, only in one way. When you have a major social movement, the civil rights movement in an earlier century, the progressive movement, the women's movement, the environmental movement, you do not get social change unless you have a truly mobilizing, deep, organized social movement. I'm afraid to say, and I know some of your listeners will not like that, but in comparison to the Occupy Wall Street, is a very sorry attempt.
Well, the Occupy Wall Street movement are zealously opposed to electoral politics, and it's as though they are incapable of keeping two thoughts simultaneously in their heads, which is one, that the government has been bought by the oligarchs, which is obviously a fact, but that there is nevertheless a difference between one party, the Republicans, who are dedicated to radical social change, and the other party, the Democrats, who are essentially half owned by the oligarchs, but if they had some wind at their back, they may be able to perform their democratic duties.
Well, there are three or four issues here all kind of lumped together. One is that the left protest is so weak and dissipated and aimed at changing society rather than politics. The comparison to the Tea Party is almost heartbreaking. So that's one issue. We don't have a message. Recently, a CNN reporter asked a bunch of Democratic voters to recite the Republican message, and they did it to perfection. And then she asked him to recite the Democratic message. And again, I'm talking about Democratic voters. And they were unable to tell what is the Democratic message. I have a PhD and slightly above average IQ. I don't know what the Democratic message is. One day it's for the president calls Wall Street a bunch of fat cats and cusses them out. The next day he's trying to win them over to write him checks. I don't know what the left message is these days. And so if you don't have even a narrative, if you're not clear who is the source of the problem, what are we going to do about it, how can you expect the masses to follow? So our first step has to be to have a coherent, compelling message, and not which is self-satisfying. There's going on a lot of masturbation going on. I mean, people want to enjoy themselves, which they have a right to, but that's not the way you change the world. Your first step is you have to have a message which satisfies not only you, but Vincent Over people
sure. Are
not already on your side.
Right. It has to go beyond self-righteousness into connecting with the people who need to be mobilized.
Amen and amen. That's, I mean, we don't do the most elementary things.
Right.
And then you go to the left publications, there's nitpicking, and again, completely predictable. There is no voice.
Right. Well, the point I was trying to make is that if the Tea Party could take over the Republican Party, I don't see why the Occupy movement couldn't take over the Democratic Party. It's an empty shell. There's a couple of interesting Beltway insiders who wrote a book recently, It's Worse Than You Think, about how the Republican Party is really the problem in Washington. And they can't even get arrested in the mainstream media, even though they're Beltway fixtures. And their point is that the landscape has completely changed. The Democratic Party is, in fact, the Conservative Party today, and the Republican Party is the Radical Party.
That is true. The Republican Party has a very strong conservative wing and a radical conservative wing, and they compete who is more conservative. The Democrats have one-third. Call them blue dogs or just whatever else you want to call them, who are not that different. So it's really almost optically mistaken to talk about Democratic Party and the Republican Party. If you look at what happened when the Democrats controlled the White House, had a majority in the House, and 60 votes in the Senate, and they still couldn't get the most elementary liberal stuff, single payer, let's say, done, not to mention gun control, my God, or carbon controls, because there are people like Ben Nelson and Conrad and such. There's an important segment of the Democratic Party which is really not that different from Republicans. So you have a tiny liberal party, part of the Democratic wing. You have a solid conservative party among Republicans, and a Democratic wing which really is not that different.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Amitai Etzioni, University Professor and Professor of International Affairs and Director of the Institute for Communitarian Policy Studies at George Washington University, and the author of A New Approach to International Relations and How Patriotic is the Patriot Act. He has an article at CNN now, U.S. Economy Heading Straight for a Cliff. I mentioned earlier these two authors who can't get arrested because they've broken the press convention of actually saying we in the press are not allowed to tell the truth. The point that they made, and this is basically my question to you, is this, again, a psychological component? When you compare what happened in 2000 with Bush v. Gore, where the presidency was awarded to George W. Bush, the Democrats accepted that, even they swallowed that bitter pill in the name of American democracy. Conversely, when Obama got elected with a huge majority and the Democrats had the House and the Senate and the White House, the Republicans basically declared war on them and said, we're not going to deal with you guys. The difference is profound.
I very much agree. By the way, I should say the book you mentioned is by Tom Mann and Norman Ornstein.
Right.
You may as well
acknowledge them. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. They're my friends and colleagues, so
yeah.
I have to do that. You don't. The problem is not always the other side. How did the president start his number one item? He's concerned with reforming our health system. He first promised the insurance companies that he will not even allow a discussion of single payer, so to win them over. Then he went to pharma, the people who manufacture our drugs, and promised them that he will not allow Americans to buy medications out of the country, which would vastly reduce the cost of health care. Having satisfied these two lobbies, then he sat back for a year and waited to see what's going to happen on the Hill, given no guidance, given that they're all subject to campaign contributions and special interests. It came out as a very complicated being, which has some good elements, and basically is a voucher system, which was really a Cato Institute conservative idea, first introduced by Mitt Romney. And so we even didn't dare start a conversation appropriately. That's aside from the question, if what we needed at that point was not a huge stimulus, and that should have been the number one issue, rather than DMV's healthcare. So we should occasionally also point the finger at what's happening on our side and not only on what the other side is doing.
Well, sure, and you could throw into that the fact that after they passed the inadequate stimulus bill, for which the Republicans offered no cooperation, gave no vote, the next item on the agenda, while the economy was in freefall, was pushing through cap and trade, which had a snowball's chance in hell of passing. And again, that was when the Tea Party was formed. The left, they should have been the ones that ran away with the outrage over Wall Street, but instead it was captured by the right wing.
I couldn't agree with you more. I really couldn't agree with you more.
Right.
So we need to awaken. And let me give one other example. So I just was in a meeting, a very small dinner, with a cardinal who was actually from another country was visiting, and some of our kind of progressive religious people were in the room, which I don't get to see too often, and they all wanted to talk about the least among us. Now, you have to be heartless not to hear the message of the least among us. But the least among us are not going to carry today politically. So I argued that you can get exactly the same things in terms of more tax on the rich, more estate tax, and more progressive income tax, many other changes you favor, if you say we want a fair system. And that's what the president, in effect, had been recently saying. He wants everybody to have a fair chance and everybody make a fair contribution. But that kind of language, and I'm talking about changing the language, not the substance of our points, my left colleagues are not willing to entertain. They want to talk about inequality. Well, inequality of opportunity requires inequality of result. Inequality of result is politically not sellable. So we need to go back and do our basic homework and frame things not in a misleading way, but in a way which can bring in other people into the tent.
So in other words, embrace the moral dimension of the argument as opposed to the numbers crunching.
Absolutely.
So to get back to your article at CNN, which we haven't talked about, Dr. Amitai Etzioni, U.S. economy heading straight for the cliff. Obviously, there is a convergence that's going to take place very soon with the expiration of the Bush tax cuts. The Republicans are also likely to pull another one of their Tea Party tantrums over the national debt. There's an expectation that this could happen soon. Obviously, nothing will be done to address these looming issues until after the election. When do you think it's going to come to a crunch?
Well, that's a tricky question for a social scientist. Because unfortunately, we realize that our capacity, we can predict anything but the future. So our capacity to predict is limited. For instance, there's news today that the European Central Bank will start printing money. And if they flood the European markets with money, they may save the day and change the game one more time. But the stock market, which in that case is a major factor, usually anticipate things about 6 months, not to the day, but roughly. Well, November minus six brings you to May, June. So you would have to expect that very shortly the stock markets, who so far focused on the fact that China is slowing down, India is slowing down, Europe is in a terrible mess, but have not paid mind to this triple witching hour, which is facing the American political and economic system. Once they turn to that and they see, as you just said correctly, that it seems almost inconceivable that it will be resolved before the election, the stock market may well take a real dive, and that is going to further demoralize the business community and the political base. So it's possible, or I would give it not more than a few percentages, but it's possible that things at that point will look so dark that both sides will say, look, this is too threatening. We do have to do something. The public may not forgive us if you keep our partisan agenda and wait till November, at which point we have a few weeks to fix things which are extremely complicated and just require drafting of laws and such. It practically cannot be done in weeks. I'm talking about between November and January 1st. So I wouldn't bet on it. In fact, I'm not betting on it. I took my money out of whatever I have. Unlikely, but I wouldn't like to give completely up hope that Washington, as we get so close to the cliff, will suddenly pull away and save us.
Well, I hope that is the case. You're asking for statesmanship in a place consumed by partisan politics. But just in closing, though, it seems that given the results in Wisconsin, I think the Republicans are fairly confident now that the kind of plutocratic agenda is working on the American people. They're going to be spending billions on advertising, focusing on the deficit as the main problem, which people seem to be buying that idea that the billionaires are the job creators and we have to give them further tax cuts. And nobody addresses the fact that the deficit was one third of it was run up by George W. Bush, and half of it combined was run up by Reagan, Bush Senior, and Bush Junior. That's not in the calculus here, and it would seem that everything is playing into Mitt Romney's hands. And as the worse the economy gets, if it's going to crash in a few months, all the better for Mitt.
Unless it gets really bad. And then people may rally around the president. But again, the president already once indicated he was willing to accept in that deal he made with the Speaker of the House, a deal which there would be huge tax cuts, including for the rich, in exchange for some few benefits in terms of continued federal spending, like 1 to 10. So if tomorrow the Republicans are fearing that there's going to be a public backlash, if things get really, really dark, come to the president back and say, all right, we are willing to talk now about huge tax cuts for our constituency, and we'll allow you to pay teachers or, you know, some pittance for the poor, or we allow Medicaid to continue, I would not rule out that the president would not jump on it.
Well, neither of us are in the prediction business, but I've really enjoyed the conversation, Dr. Amitai Etzioni, and I wish we were talking about something more cheerful, but
next time.
Thank you again.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Amitai Etzioni, who's a university professor and professor of international affairs and director of the Institute for Communitarian Policy Studies at George Washington University. He served as a senior advisor to the White House from 1979 to 1980, and in 1990, he founded the Communitarian Network, a not-for-profit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to shoring up the moral, social, and political foundations of society. Dr. Etzioni is the author of 24 books, including The New Golden Rule, The Spirit of Community, and The Moral Dimensions Towards a New Economics. His most recent books are My Brother's Keeper, A Memoir and a Message from Empire to Community, A New Approach to International Relations, and How Patriotic is the Patriot Act. He has an article at CNN, U.S. Economy Heading Straight for the Cliff. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about Wisconsin and the European economy adding to the Democrats' woes.